through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
That was a late one. A delayed scream.
Well, yeah, you put pressure on it.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Car Toys. That scared me, Jake. I got my heart beating a little too fast.
Good. I hope your heart's beating fast on this Tuesday, because we are bringing our listeners a great show today.
We are. So we're going to talk a bit about the Super Bowl hangover. We've got some Greg Olson news, some interesting news there. Getting into an interesting conversation about where the Seahawks should spend their assets this offseason. We've also got Bill Barnwell on the show, Brock Heward coming in studio, Mike Salk in studio. That's next. We got a full show.
We got Curtis Rogers back in the building from Miami.
We don't have to mention that. I mean, yeah, Curtis is here, but like, yeah.
I mean, look at that tan, bro.
Get a good bronze going in the middle of February.
I didn't know you were going to be coming back.
You're glowing back there.
Yeah, I thought I'd post up in Miami for a few
Curtis,
more days.
Curtis, you watched the Super Bowl, right? Were you in the media area?
I was, yeah. Yeah, Luke Wilson and I actually a table away from each other. He looked like he was so mad to not be playing in the game, so I gave him some space. Like, you know what, Luke, you're a very chill guy, but you're also a professional athlete. And, you know, the Seahawks, they gave it to the 49ers once earlier in the season. So I think he was like, oh, man, we could beat these guys.
It was an interesting game for a lot of reasons. But one of the things that I started thinking about today that we were all talking about actually today was the idea of a Super Bowl hangover. I think we can all say that the Rams suffered a Super Bowl hangover. So Kyle Brown looked at some of the season results for the subsequent season of a Super Bowl loser. So let me go over these quickly before we get started.
Okay, let's do it.
All right. 2014, Seahawks finished 10-6, lost in the divisional round to the Panthers. That actually was one of those games where you felt more encouraged about the team after it. I specifically remember locker room cleanout being kind of positive, like a positive feeling where people were excited. It was, it was much like 2012, just like 2012 all over again. 2015, Panthers finished 6-10, missed the playoffs. 2016, Falcons finished 10-6, lost in the divisional round. 2007, Patriots, 11-5, won the Super Bowl. 2018, Rams.
Always have to be the outlier.
They
like, why can't you conform with everybody else?
The Patriots are the kid that when the teacher is gone, the substitute's in, they offer to take attendance.
Oh, God.
That's the Patriots. The 2018 Rams finished 9-7, missed the playoffs. Obviously, an interesting season for them. I was expecting them to be kind of the big contender in the NFC West that the Seahawks would have to vie with. It ended up being the 49ers, who will now have to try to buck the trend of a Super Bowl hangover themselves. Now, when the Seahawks finished the season, despite the fact that they had 11 regular season wins, got back to a divisional round, so that's an improvement from the year prior where they fell out in the wild card round, I feel like the tenor around the team was kind of negative, a little bummed out. Part of that makes sense.
Well, yeah. I mean, but also, as we were kind of prepping for the show, it's funny because you kind of hear some of the same things that back in 2018 when that show ended, or when that season ended, it was, you know, Pete Carroll too stubborn for his offense. You know, Brian Schottenheimer, is he the guy for the job? And then a new addition to that conversation was Ken Norton Jr., your defensive coordinator. And is he the right guy for the job? And so it was very negative in terms of this coaching staff. But in reality, when you really look at the situation, I think the result of this Super Bowl, having the 49ers lose and looking at the health of the NFC West, I think Seahawks fans should be very optimistic about where the Seahawks currently stand. They have the healthiest situation in terms of cap space, mm-hmm. in terms of draft capital.
Yep.
You look at the Rams right now, and they are in a really tight position in terms of their cap space, and they have really no future in terms of their first-round picks for this upcoming draft and drafts after this.
Subsequent one.
Right? And so it's pretty amazing to see where the Rams are in terms of how they're able to sustain and continue to build their future. And with the 49ers, you're looking at history. History shows that teams that lose the Super Bowl have a very hard time overcoming. And the reality is that you're not going to be able to keep the same team together from year to year. And can the 49ers overcome that? I don't know. But you have a Seahawks team that right now is healthy in terms of a coaching staff that has been there, a GM that's been there, and also you have, ultimately, Stacey, what you pointed out,
right,
the biggest key of it all.
Your franchise quarterback, Russell Wilson. And that's really the big difference. Not only have the Seahawks, of these last NFC teams, the Cardinals have all obviously been there before, but the Seahawks were the only team to win, to get there and to win. And you also have the only proven franchise quarterback. Now, we don't know what the future could hold for Jared Goff, for Jimmy Garoppolo, for Kyler Murray, who looked really promising this year. But I think what you've seen is Russell Wilson's the only guy that's been there and won, got back there again. Obviously, that one wasn't as successful, but he's still a proven franchise quarterback, the winningest quarterback through his first eight seasons in the NFL. An amazing record and feat to hold. And I think that when you're looking at this, if you're a Seahawks fan and you're feeling, you know, like I'm sure a lot of folks did, that the 49ers have kind of surpassed you, I think that's a feeling some fans had.
For sure.
Ultimately, you have the thing that every team wants, every team needs, which is a franchise quarterback.
It's true. It doesn't solve all problems, but it certainly gets you to the point where you are so much closer than everybody else. I mean, you look at the Seahawks in their second game with the 49ers. They were an inch away from beating the 49ers, who got to the Super Bowl, who was a team that perpetually everybody thought that they had more talent on their roster than you. They had overall better scheme than you. But you were in that position to win those two games because of your franchise quarterback and because of the culture that is surrounding your team and the belief that they have in one another. That's all nice and dandy. But what it really comes down to from saying, okay, we have this franchise quarterback now. We have Pete Carroll, John Schneider, and these and the right pieces who have been there, done that. Now it's about capitalizing, moving forward into 2020, making sure that you're making the right decisions that can give you that chance to surpass the Rams, the 49ers, and even the Cardinals as they continue to keep building around Kyler Murray. They are in a great position to do so, and I think that that is exciting as you sit here, as the season has officially concluded 2 days after that. That's why I think Seahawks fans should be excited about 2020 and beyond that because of the health that they're in.
I completely agree, Jake. And you alluded to this also, that questions still linger, right? You weren't set to make it back to a Super Bowl. You've got some of the important pieces, coach, GM, quarterback that's been there. You've got all-pro players, Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson, second team All-Pro. You've got plenty of Pro Bowlers. If you re-sign Jadeveon Clowney, you've got another great staple there on your defense, but you still got to put some pieces together. It's not an easy path back to the Super Bowl, and we're getting into some of those questions today. We're obviously going to be exploring them all throughout the offseason and into the regular season, but some of the ones I'm really excited to talk about today: where do you spend your money? You have $60 million in cap space. You have the eighth most cap space of all NFL teams in 2020.
Right, and people look at that, and I've heard this multiple times, $60 million, but they're pessimistic because so much of that is going to go towards Jadeveon Clowney. And you fully understand that, but the reality of that particular situation is you can move people around on this
right.
roster. There are three people in particular that you can look at and say, if you get rid of, you know, so-and-so, they can help, you know, bolster that cap space even further. Justin Britt's one of them. You look at Ed Dixon, he's one of them. And also DJ Fluker is a possibility in terms of being cap casualties to expand that cap space. But also, you want to know an interesting stat? The
yes,
Kansas City
always.
Chiefs. Where do you think they ranked in terms of defensive line spending this year?
20th. First. No, 15th.
Give me an answer. You gave me three.
16th. Which,
okay, so you say 16th. They were towards the bottom after paying
Dang it,
Frank
I should
Clark.
Have stayed with 20th.
After paying Frank Dang. Clark a massive,
stupid,
massive salary, their 2019 cap hit amongst their defensive line was towards the bottom, somewhere in the mid-20s. Think
wow.
about that. How did that happen? Because you're able to maneuver around the money. Frank Clark's cap hit was only $5 million, $6 million, somewhere in that range. So it's going to eventually come back to get them. You know, his cap hit's going to be bigger and bigger. But there are ways to move this around where Clowney's signing isn't going to all of a sudden squash and squander all of this money opportunity for them. John Schneider, Matt Thomas, they're extremely smart in terms of how to maneuver those contracts. And so this is very exciting. It's an exciting time. And I think, Stacey, we differ in terms of
we do.
Seeing where the Seahawks should be spending their assets and how they should be going about it. And I think it's going to be a really fun, dynamic conversation as we go through this offseason.
Yeah, it'll be a fun debate in which one of us will be right. And
of course. And it'll be me.
And one of us will have some good points. And that's all I'll say. We're also going to talk a little bit, because one of those other lingering questions isn't just where you spend money, but where you spend time talking about your philosophy and your scheme. What else changes? It's not just the money they're spending this offseason, the draft picks they're going to make, right?
It's true.
What are you going to change about your team? What are you going to change about the way you coach? What are you going to change about your belief system? It may not be a lot for Carol, but it could be something, and might that be enough? So let's get into it with three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we gotta protect the kids" nonsense.
Kaya, take it away.
Okay, I will.
Former Panther tight end Greg Olsen is reportedly going to visit the Seahawks. Where does tight end rank among their biggest needs?
What? Greg Olsen?
Greg Olsen. G-Reg.
That's what I'm
G-Reg.
Talking about. G-Reg. See, now, there's a little bit of background to this, too. Because if you remember, a couple days ago, actually, during the Super Bowl week...
How could I forget?
There was a picture that went viral about Cam Newton whispering into Russell Wilson's ear and saying, hey, what did he say? Right? And there was all these different conversations, and Greg Olsen quote-tweeted and said that, hey, Greg Olsen can still play.
Ooh.
Russell Wilson then replied and said, in caps, facts, with a picture of him and Greg Olsen next to each other taking a picture.
Russell, listen, I want you to go with Greg.
So, with all of that evidence rolled into one, I think there was a little bit of recruiting going on by Mr. Wilson. Is John Schneider and these guys, their interest really strong in Greg Olsen? I think it should be, because people point to Will Dissly. He's too much of an unknown right now. Great player, could be an awesome, awesome tight end for you. But having a player like Greg Olsen with his experience, his abilities as a tight end, he's still one of the top tight ends in the league in terms of run blocking and pass catching. Now you've got two guys that can do that extremely well. But you've got Greg Olsen, who is a much more known commodity. I really like this, potentially.
Yeah, I think that you look at it, and Will Dissly has a lot of promise, and he's a really exciting player. But you wonder about not only the attrition of those two very serious injuries with a patellar tendon tear and an Achilles rupture, but you wonder about the depth that you have there. Do you bring back Luke Wilson? What do you do with Ed Dixon? You've got Jacob Hollister. Outside of Dissly, you didn't really have a guy that you had to start your roster that you considered a solid number two. So.
You can't go into this situation this year with only two tight ends. For depth purposes, it's a bad place to be. And also, there's another reality that, George Fant and having that extra tight end jumbo package, it probably isn't going to be able to be here much longer, because George Fant wants to be, as he said in exit interviews, that he wants to be a starting left tackle for somebody in the league this year. So if that's his goal, I doubt that his future is going to remain here in Seattle.
Question number two.
Number two.
Can Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes become the first quarterback to win a Super Bowl after receiving a record-breaking contract?
This is going to be one of the more interesting kind of storylines to follow, because I think we're all still following that for Russell Wilson, at least. And one of the things that I keep seeing from people is, well, if Russell Wilson would change his contract structure, the Seahawks could get more guys. Guys get different salaries in the NFL. I know you guys all know that. I'm not telling anyone anything they don't know, but it's like when we talk about defensive end spending and free agency. A top-tier defensive end is going to command $20 million a year. You're not going to get close to that for other positions. So you can still build around a quarterback. I do think, though, it starts to inch toward kind of, is it 15% of the cap that's too much? Is it 20%? Where's the line? So
right.
I am very curious to see how teams deal with this.
It is curious, but also when you look at it, it makes a lot of sense in terms of the way the Kansas City Chiefs, how they operate in general already. If you're giving that much money to Patrick Mahomes, you better be surrounding him with the best weapons, the best protection. And they already do that. And I think that they're always going to be all in. What it forces you to do as an organization, and I think the Chiefs are, again, all in on this, is they have to invest in the offensive side of the ball, and they have to try and get a couple playmakers or two that can be disruptors like a Frank Clark, and they have to draft. They have to put their draft capital and build through the draft on the defensive side of the ball. So it'll be interesting to see how they operate and how they go about it. But Patrick Mahomes, without question to me, is going to be the first $40 million quarterback.
Oh, he's going to get paid.
He is going to astronomically change the quarterback market.
He's just going to have a fridge full of ketchup. He's going to have a ketchup fridge. If I was a mega millionaire, if someone was paying me $40 million a year, I would spend an obscene amount of money on things that I had no business buying in bulk. You know what I mean? I don't even know what it would be at this time, but it would be like I would have like a hot sauce fridge, and I would have a separate fridge of just like pickles or something. I don't know. I would not be a responsible millionaire. It would be a joke.
That's why you know, you need to have the right people in your corner, Stacey, to keep you in line.
No, they're going to be work. Curtis is going to tell me to go spend all my money on fast food.
Well, Taco Bell will probably be very happy if Curtis Rogers has anything to do with it.
They got a buffalo chicken nacho fried burrito right now.
That doesn't sound healthy.
Number three.
Doesn't sound like it's supposed to be eaten or consumed.
It's not. I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
You guys touched on this briefly a couple minutes ago. Where do the Seahawks need to invest more this offseason? On offense or on defense?
I'm going to let you go first, Jake.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jake.
All right.
I got my rebuttal ready.
Well, I think it's pretty easy in my mind. I think really when you break it down, to me, my philosophy is both, that you can do both. But really where I think you're investing your money is to invest in the pass rush on your defensive line. You have to get that done. But you also have to invest in terms of protection and in additional weapons for Russell Wilson. The puzzle piece is, where do you invest in free agent dollars and where do you invest in the draft? And how do you put those things together? Because you look at it and say, okay, whatever you don't do, you can invest in through the draft in your first round pick and your 2 second rounders. And probably you're going to be rewarded a third with your comp pick. Mm. But if I'm investing assets, I am trying to eliminate all the confusion about the defense. I think the defense is already pretty locked in from the standpoint your secondary, your two safety spots are locked in. You have one cornerback spot locked in. Trey Flowers, I think the staff is going to say, hey, we're going to bank on a bounce back year three and try and bring in competition for Trey Flowers, but we still believe in him. Are you going to bench KJ Wright? I don't think so after the year that he had. So really, you're just looking at the defensive line and pass rush in particular. You can get that done and still spend money and shore up your offensive line and get some weapons for Russell Wilson.
I think the bulk of your spending, if I'm making a pie chart, I would do 2/3 defense, whether it's your draft picks and your cap spending. Because I think when you think of spending in particular, if I were to address deficiencies on offense, I think I'd look at getting someone in. If you don't keep Upati, like a left guard, and you have guys in your system you can bring up, but you had a lot of injuries there this year. Add some depth there. Maybe you bring in young talent. Maybe that's through the draft and not free agency. But the bulk of your spending, to me, should be on offense. And part of that is the positions.
Defense.
That's totally what I said. And part of that is the positions that you need, because it's not just, you know, oh, you need 10 new guys on defense. It's at the positions where you need help are the most expensive positions on defense.
So where would you like them
to spend? So if you bring in an elite so say you bring in Clowney at $20 million a year, I wouldn't mind bringing in another top-tier edge rusher, you know, at near there. That's a lot of spending. But, you know, I think bringing in some cornerback talent you could do through the draft. But for free agency, I would be totally fine with the bulk of that going to defense.
So, and to me, when you say defense, and I just want to make it clear to why I'm picking both sides,
right,
is look, you can still address pass rush and still add a lot of capital into your offense,
you
your
can.
Offensive line. And, you know, look, they're bringing in Greg Olsen for a reason. The tight end spot is one position that they have to address. Wide receiver three is a position that they potentially have to address. So that's how I'm looking at it. Your guards and tackles, you have not had a pass blocking unit that has ranked it even close to the middle of the pack. It has always been towards the bottom of the pack.
Pass rush?
Pass blocking.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's something that needs to change if you're going to have Russell Wilson take on more of a role within this offense. I fully agree with the concept of paying Clowney and getting another top-tier edge rusher, but what else do you spend on? You can if you're going to go all defense, to me, I'd rather have them go all defensive line and everything else. Mm-hmm. You know, it falls where it is. But if you're looking at acquiring another top corner, I just don't know if they're going to do that. I mean, it'll be interesting.
I do think that competition might come through the draft, and it might be one of those things where, because I do think they like Trey Flowers. Pete Carroll has always talked about the way he attacks the ball in particular that he really likes. And, you know, whatever else he needs to work on, maybe they can hope for a Shaquille Griffin-like revamp in his third year. This will be Flowers' third year.
Yes.
I do agree that if you're going to spend, I'm fine with it being just on the defensive line. My priorities would be defensive end, and then after that, maybe it depends what you do with Jaron Reed. If you don't keep Reed, I go defensive tackle to get some depth there, and it could be an older guy in free agency, which we've talked about before. I would like to see competition in the secondary, and I like the guys that are there. I really like Diggs. I really like McDougald. I'm really curious to see what you have with Marquise Blair, how Trey Flowers can come along. I obviously really like Shaquille Griffin, but what does it look like to have some talent in there? Maybe it's a nickel corner. Maybe it's a guy that you have more regularly. If they don't lean on Ugo Amadi for that, then who do they have?
Well, that's a great question. So again, it comes down to, are you bringing in a Jamar Taylor, a guy who's in the last wave of wave three in free agency to try and bring in some competition for your young, promising rookie, who, by the way, Pete Carroll said, I wish we had played sooner.
That made so angry.
Well, it's only because we've been talking about trying to play nickel for quite some time, and they decided to go base defense, and there was all this optimism around Ugo Amadi, and when he played, he actually played well and showed you that he could play. So I still think that they like Ugo Amadi, but it's a matter of, are you bringing competition to Ugo Amadi and Trey Flowers? That will be interesting for me to see. I think defensive line, if you fix defensive line and pass rush, it makes everybody else on that defense better.
And that's exactly
what I think. It makes your linebackers and it's your secondary better. I think that really has to be the part that you address on the defensive side of the ball. You don't need to address as many pieces on defense as you think. Just the need is much greater, unfortunately, than what you would want it to be. You don't, outside of LJ Collier, Rasheem Green, and Puna Ford, who else do you have locked in on your roster?
Nas Jones.
Oh, Nas Jones. Sorry. How could I forget about Nas Jones?
Respect it.
I apologize.
But, Jake, that's exactly what someone said. 4-2-5. Maybe if they have a pass rush, Trey won't struggle as badly. I do agree with that point, right? The two are hand in hand. Your secondary does well and does better if your pass rush is good. So
that's what Paul Moyer wrote about, 710sports.com, up today. Trey Flowers had a good year, and he will be even better once he can benefit from a pass rush in front of him.
Ooh, check that out, you guys.
I don't know if I disagree with Paul in the sense that I don't think Trey had a good year or a great year in that standpoint. He had a better year in the sense that he was able to get three picks. But you look at the end of the year, the last four or five games of the season for Trey Flowers, it was about as bad as it gets. And he has to bounce back in a major way, change his body, get himself right in the offseason, just like Shaquille did heading into year three. And I'm hopeful that Trey can make those same kind of changes and add that pass rush. It can be a difference maker.
You guys definitely need to go check that out on 710sports.com. But maybe wait until after our show, because we got a lot of good stuff in store. That starts next with Mike Salk.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Hey, Mike.
Turn on my... Hey, there we go. Hi, Stacey.
Hi.
What's up, Salk?
Man, Kyle running the board for the first time in a while. Is he okay back there?
Jeez, rookie mistake, Kyle. Rookie mistake.
I love it.
Barely running the board.
I know. Seriously. No Wassel. Curtis took off on you guys.
Well, yeah. Curtis went to the Super Bowl, so now he's too big time for us.
Oh, is that the case?
Yeah. This is Miami Curtis. Post-Miami Curtis is a different Curtis.
That'll happen to people.
He showed up for our opening segment, just wanted to show off how nice of a tan
he was glowing, and then he just left.
Yeah. He's like, I don't feel that anymore.
He's like, I'm over it.
Miami guy.
I hung out with NFL players and watch the Super Bowl. I'm good.
When we all went to the Super Bowl, at the 2014 Super Bowl, Brock brought me to the big ESPN party that year.
Yeah.
And the one person who stood out by far at that party was Cam Newton.
Oh,
when he walked in the door, it was different. And there were a bunch of famous people in and around. And
yeah.
When Cam Newton walked in with his smile and what he was wearing and his size, just the presence he has when he walks into a gigantic room,
yeah.
And basically a warehouse-sized room that they had turned into this party, it was instantly about him.
He's not only a gigantic human. Like, when you watch...
He's huge.
I'm thinking of Seahawks home games when they've played the Panthers. Looking up from the press box,
mm-hmm.
He looks like the biggest person on the field. He also looks like an actor playing a quarterback.
Right.
Like, just that smile.
Yeah.
Is.
He is. He's a guy. We had him... when we were at... I go and coach at this camp called the Elite 11 in the opening. It's the top 150 high school kids in the country. You know, top recruits all across the country, and it's at this massive 7-on-7 tournament and offensive line and all that. And he was there because he runs a 7-on-7 team in the offseason, and a couple of his guys were in this thing. And so he was cheering them on. He was trash-talking the other team and all that. But he was a giant.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking
about big boy.
Massive bodies, massive high school kids, all this stuff. I've been around NFL guys myself, and it's just amazing. And thinking that he played quarterback,
yeah.
It was just,
yeah.
It was
still
incredible.
Does. And at an incredibly high level. I mean, like, I know Cam Newton sort of fallen out of favor because he had arm issues this year, and after the Super Bowl loss, he sort of, I don't know, he lost his team, I think, a little bit, but he may go somewhere else this offseason. If Cam Newton gets back to another Super Bowl, I won't be surprised.
No, what if he has, like, a Ryan Tannehill-esque kind of resurgence?
Well, and he was so much better to begin with than Ryan. I mean, that guy,
yeah.
What did they win? 14? They go 15-1 that year?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they won
so,
their
yeah.
first 14 games of the season or something? I mean, like, dude, he's a moose.
Yeah, it would be an interesting fit in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a really cool one to see play out because Matt Nagy is so creative.
Yeah. How about in Tennessee?
Tennessee could be a good one, but I look at that situation and say that they want more of a traditional drop-back guy, whereas Nagy has that same type of background with the Chiefs that he's willing to dip down into that college style of
yeah,
system.
But he's got Mitch Trubisky, so he probably wouldn't know what to do with a Cam Newton.
It's probably true.
What a life Cam leads, being taller than 5'2". I can't imagine.
Must be great.
I can't imagine.
Yes.
Mike, before
yes.
you got here, Jake and I were getting into a bit of a debate. It's one that we're probably going to have all offseason and one we've had before.
Without question, I'm sure.
I think I know where you stand, but I'm curious. So we were talking about the Super Bowl hangover the San Francisco 49ers could face.
Legit.
And then kind of legit. And then where each team kind of stands in the NFC West as far as their cap situation, draft capital.
And you're sort of hoping the Rams are on, like, they had a big bender.
Yeah.
And this is one of
yeah,
those two-day hangovers.
Exactly.
Like, ooh, I went out Friday night.
I don't know anything about that.
Toast
something
Saturday.
Tells me and sometimes it lingers.
You're how old? Give yourself 10 years. You will find out exactly what I'm talking about with the two-day hangover. You're like, oh my God, Sunday and I still can't function.
Brandon is one of our new writers. He's like 25, 24. I was trying to explain to him that I was sitting like crisscross applesauce on the ground the other day. I was going through documents and I stood up and like my hips and my knees hurt.
Yeah, just wait.
It only gets worse.
Hopefully the Rams right. are going to experience the two-year hangover
right.
while the Niners have their first-year hangover.
What well, we and, talked about.
Yeah, and also you see that in the Rams right now in terms of cap space and draft capital, they're not in a good
nope.
situation at all.
They blew all that.
So you look at the Seahawks, and they're actually in a, I would say, the healthiest situation on any of the teams
yeah.
in the NFC West.
Mm-hmm.
There's no bad Super Bowl hangover voodoo going on with them. They're in the best cap situation that they've personally been in. And as Stacey well put at the very top of the show,
thank you.
That you have what all those guys envy is a legit franchise quarterback.
Yeah, Brock and I were doing the podcast this morning, which will come out tonight at 7:00. BrockandSalkPodcast.com, and one of our debates was which is better, Jimmy Garoppolo or Jared Goff, and the answer is sort of like neither. Like, I mean, I don't really want either one of those guys on my team. So yeah, I think you're obviously in the best position quarterback wise in your division, and it's a good division, but I think you're in the best spot there. You need help on defense. I'll keep coming back to it. This will be my mantra over and over again this offseason. You got to rush the passer. If you can't rush the passer, you cannot affect the teams in the league that you need to. You cannot help all the other guys defensively. You can't play Pete Carroll football. You need to be able to rush the passer the way they absolutely could not this year. Clowney is a great start. You need one or two other guys at or near his level to truly play the style of defense that Pete Carroll wants, and that has to be priority 1, 2, and 3 for me. The other guy that I find intriguing, and it's not a free agent player, is someone like Wade Phillips. I love the idea of he's available. He's coached in a couple of Super Bowls. He's got a little different style from Pete.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I think Pete would do well to bring in somebody. And I'm not saying you got to get rid of Ken Norton, but somebody to as a consultant or to add to the to what they're doing that could come in and change things up defensively a little bit so it's not stale.
I'll tell you right now that will never happen.
It should.
It will never happen.
Why?
There's two reasons.
You don't think Pete's capable of changing up some style like that?
No, it's not that he's incapable of changing style.
He hates
style.
Wade Phillips? Are
it's
you saying
not that he hates Wade
Phillips?
He might.
There was another situation like this where they had Mike Pettine on their staff.
I remember that.
Right? And what has Mike Pettine become? He's become a defensive coordinator in the league and, within your own conference, and you just had to play him within your division.
Well, I get that, but Wade Phillips been around. I mean, like, I think he's the guy. You could hire him. You don't even just make him a consultant.
Right.
Hire Wade Phillips. Make him your co-defensive coordinator. I mean, you got all the money in the world. You got the Allen's money to spend on coaching. Why wouldn't you want a brain like his who will just do things a little bit differently? They need talent defensively. Mm-hmm. They also need some ability to change up and do things a little bit differently, because I think other offenses have figured out some of the holes in their system.
I would agree with that. I sit there and counter that argument with assets and just say, I believe that you can get things done on the defensive line with pass rush. You can invest in Clowney. You can get one or two more other pass rushers that are going to be very good football players, if not frontline guys. But you still have to fill in the holes that are there on the offensive side of the ball as well. You know, you look at it, and again, this can be done in free agent spending. This can be done in draft picks. This could be tight end. Offensive line, to me, is a priority. A tight end, maybe. Receiver, three. I think that there's enough holes and ability and flexibility to where you can get it done on the defensive line and still invest in your offense and still give Russell Wilson more than what he's had.
Yeah, and I guess that's just where I see it differently from you. It's not that those things wouldn't be nice, but I have this memory of Theo Epstein telling a group of us at some point, hey guys, you can't do everything. You just can't. In an off season, you have to leave some things alone and hope that it works out. Every team in the league is doing that, and even more so in football with a salary cap situation. Let Russ figure a lot of that out. He's really good. He did it really well this year. Their offense, some of it will get better just by natural growth. Yeah, you might find a spare tight end, and maybe Greg Olsen's that guy. I don't know if you don't have to pay him a ton of money. That'd be great. He's still, 600 yards receiving last year. So, okay, fine. But at the end of the day, their defense wasn't good. Their offense was. Mm-hmm. Make your defense good. That's what Pete Carroll wants. And that is going to require some help in the pass rush, some help in the defensive line, and maybe some different ideas on how to set yourself up for success. So I think that's such an enormous part. And then after that, you need safety help. You need corner help. You might need linebacker help. I mean, like, every level of that defense could get better.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by Car Toys. Mike, I have two quick questions. One, do you want to stick around?
Yes.
Number two, how do you feel about going to an alternate universe?
How do we get there?
Right, exactly. Well, we're taking you there next.
I'm in.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Little did you guys know, Patrick Mahomes was just maybe very close to being a Seahawk.
It's true.
So we know that John Schneider flew to his pro day, Patrick Mahomes' pro day at Texas Tech, one of only two GMs to even go out there, the other being John Lynch. Weird now to look back at that and see the lack of interest. I was actually talking to Brock Heward this morning. He'll be in studio with us coming up at 1 about some of the hesitation folks had about Patrick Mahomes, and that a lot of that is just being from an air raid system. People worry about whether or not a quarterback can dissect plays and what he'll be like in the NFL. And Brock, who called a couple of his games, was saying that you could even see it, though, when you were just watching the game, that he was different.
Mm-hmm.
It was fascinating to hear that perspective.
Just crazy talented. Yeah, the idea that Schneider went there at the time, I think, you know, no one's entirely sure. I think John went there with the belief that, hey, if this kid falls late enough, I'm going to take him because if nothing else, I'll trade him for a first round pick down the road because he's that talented.
Well, and reports at the time said the Seahawks were considering trading.
I think they were. I don't think they would have traded up for him, but I think they would have taken him if he had fallen to him.
Yeah.
And I think that they didn't mind the leverage against the potential contract fight that was coming up against Russ.
All right.
And so whether they had him in reserve to be their next quarterback or even just pressured Russ by talking about it, regardless, I think there was a lot of sense to be made to even let it out there and show publicly that you were willing to think about Patrick Mahomes.
And that's where we get into one of my favorite types of sports conversations, which are purely hypothetical.
Yes.
Purely hypothetical alternate reality conversations, which is, what does the team look like with both Wilson and Mahomes at quarterback? What would the quarterback competition have looked like? Would Mahomes be the same player in the Seahawks offense? Would Russell Wilson look different in the Chiefs offense? Who do the Seahawks keep? Does it just become who's more expensive? Because then you get into a really interesting conversation about, would you pick Mahomes or Wilson?
See, this is a scenario where I think it's very clear what would have happened. Like, honestly, I think it's very clear. If Patrick Mahomes would have been drafted here in Seattle as a first-round pick, that, to me, in any case, you just look at history, that shows that there is a succession plan. You look at Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. You look at where John Schneider came from in the Green Bay Packers. When you talk about developing quarterbacks and moving on and being able to use them as trade pieces, those were all late-round draft picks that they developed into actually making into quality backups. Matthew Hasselbeck, Detmer, Craig Knoll, Doug Peterson. There are a number of guys that were later rounds that you used as, hey, they're going to be good quality backups, they're going to be trade pieces. The moment that you use that first-round pick, that is a succession plan.
Yeah.
And that is saying, okay, Russell Wilson, in this point in time, we can move on from this contract and we can then let him walk because we have a talented guy that we've seen for a year or two.
I'll disagree with that a little bit, Jake.
Okay.
And the name that would come up most would be Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, he's not a first-round pick, so you're right in that regard. But he's a second-rounder, right? I mean,
yes.
And if they had gotten Mahomes, it's not like he was going in the top 15 to them. It was, what were they picking that? It was like 28 or so that they were talking about that they would have taken him. It would have not been that different from the Jimmy Garoppolo piece. And what was the idea with Garoppolo? Yeah, he's leverage against Brady if Brady either gets bad or retires or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you can trade him and get back a first-round pick a couple years later. So, yeah, I agree with you. That's a possibility that they might have at that point made the decision, forget this, we're just moving on with a new
guy. Watching Mahomes in practice, doing these no-look passes, doing some of this cool stuff.
When you have other guys that are watching Mahomes and they think, oh man, what's that guy look like?
Pete is so into competition that I think he would have relished some of that. And I do think that they could have turned around and traded Mahomes a year or two later after everybody got a glimpse of how good he was and made back double their money on it. So it might have just been an investment play. The other possibility is they could have said, great, we've got this kid for $500,000, and we're going to let Russell Wilson and his $20 to $30 million a year walk away,
right,
and we're going to do this again with a quarterback playing on his rookie deal. Because, oh, look, guess what? Patrick Mahomes won a Super Bowl on his rookie contract, just like Russell did a few years ago.
Well, see, right? Then you get into that debate about, okay, so if Russell Wilson leaves and goes to another offense, say Russell Wilson goes to Kansas City,
mm-hmm,
right? What's he look like with that offense? Is Patrick Mahomes the same player behind the Seahawks offensive line or in their philosophy? Mm.
Well, I'll say this. I think if Russell goes to Kansas City, they just keep playing a West Coast system the way Andy Reid always had. I don't think Andy Reid redesigns his whole offense the same way he did around Patrick Mahomes. I don't think he does that for Russell. I don't know.
Why?
I think Russ would be great in a West Coast system. I mean, I think it's not that different from what the Seahawks did when he first got here, right?
Well, it's not at that different, so I do agree with that sense. I just think that when you look at Andy Reid and the reason why he's making some of those decisions is because of the uniqueness of Mahomes' ability to scramble, right? And maybe
is it his ability
right
to scramble or his ability to just chuck it deep?
Both. I think all those kind of come in together, and maybe it's because they saw Patrick Mahomes be from this spread system
exactly.
That would
he'd look at Russell and say, this guy played in pro systems his whole life. Yeah, maybe we'll add in some read options, some other things to take advantage of Russ.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he would have made the kind of sea changes that he did. The real question is, what would Pete Carroll have done with Patrick Mahomes?
Right. And
I don't have
Mahomes
any idea.
Wouldn't have been as great, then it kind of makes for an interesting conversation about, well, do we give Russell Wilson more credit
right.
for what he's been able
See,
to
I think
do.
Russ is great at being efficient. That's why I'm not part of this let Russ cook philosophy or movement.
You don't want to see... You
I'm
don't
not going to be
caucusing
for let Russ cook, no. okay?
Well,
I'm not doing that.
Hey, we've seen how that's worked
It doesn't
out.
Work
that's
well
24
at all.
Hours. It's
I'll,
not working out
I'll
well.
Take the primary instead. But I'm not into that. And because I think Russ is one of his great skills is his efficiency. I don't know whether Pete would have looked at Patrick Mahomes and said, I want you to fit into my box, or if he would have said, hey, this guy just loves running around and chucking it. Let's open this thing wide open and see what happens.
No, he would have said, you're fitting into my box. And this is exactly the
I think
same
you're
thing
right.
that happened with Russell Wilson. And this is why Pete loved Russell. And this is why he loved him. And this is also, from my own experience, why Trevon Boykin makes a roster. Because you look at it and say, all right, I'm going to make him into my pro style, but what did Russell do early on in his career that helped him be so great and make this offense great? Was his ad-libbing,
mm-hmm.
was his ability to then, if things break down, he can get outside the pocket, and that becomes your excitement, your dynamic piece. It's not necessarily the offense itself.
Right.
It's your quarterback's interpretation of
this
offense.
I give you the freedom to when my play breaks down to run your play.
Exactly.
And maybe Mahomes would have been just as good at that as Russell was. I mean, you know, that guy makes some ridiculous throws from crazy angles, and if he'd been chased all over creation the way Russ was because the offensive line was so bad, maybe Mahomes does some of the same stuff, or maybe not because maybe his offensive line's been better in Kansas City.
And that is another great thing to point out as well is what does that look like? And I think there's a lot of – when we get into some of these debates about quarterbacks and can they survive in this system with the Seattle Seahawks, they really underestimate what Russell's had to do with in terms of protection and being able to withstand that, stay healthy first and foremost, and be able to be effective. I think that those are things that are stuff that you just don't know how other quarterbacks are going to be able to handle that. But if anybody could, Mahomes is one of those guys.
I'd love to ask Doug Baldwin about this.
You know who we're going to be able
really?
To ask?
Don't you think Doug would be great? Oh, well, obviously we'd have been better off if we just brought in Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, gosh.
How would Doug have handled Russell leaving? Would he have possibly been able to deal with it?
We're going to be able to just... deferring, we're going to be able to ask a bit more with Brock Huard in the studio now doing wall sits.
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
He is doing wall sits, exercising, getting ready
Don't ask
for
Brock,
this segment.
Brock has
Did
no
you
idea.
Prepare this much
huh?
for sitting with us?
I always do. Every day
okay,
I prepare for
well,
this. Don't ask Brock.
Brock has
know.
His game face on
yeah,
right now.
Know.
All right, that's coming up next.